The Calcio Podcast, episode 112. Listeners, ciao. Thanks for tuning in. This week, we've got Gregory Caltabanis of SBIsoccer.com, journalist, local lad, friend of the podcast, joining us to fill in for Nick Gianoletti. It was a great show with Greg. He was definitely very knowledgeable and really impressed me with his takes. Very well informed, I must say. And there was a ton that happened this week, man. We had a lot to get to. Milan dropping points, having lost to Atalanta rather emphatically, 3-0. We'll talk about that and what it means going forward, and if perhaps they might have opened the door to a couple of other title contenders. We'll talk about if Roma are real title contenders or if they are just pretenders, if it is an optical illusion. We'll discuss Papu Gomez leaving Atalanta, what it means for them going forward, and also what he meant for them these past couple of years. We'll also talk about Juve beating Bologna 2-0. We'll give a little bit more of a deep dive on that result and how the match played out. And of course, Inter dropping points as well to Udinese. Give a little props to them. Antonio Conte getting sent off at the end of the game. Some great dialogue between him and referee Maresca. Plus, Napoli rather unexpectedly losing to Hellas Verona despite a super early goal from Irving Lozano. We'll discuss what that means for Napoli's title challenge going forward. Is it even a real title challenge? Do they have a chance at all? Plus, a deep dive on Roma. We chat Dusan Vlahovic's long-term future at Fiorentina. And we finally address the long-awaited sacking of Marco Giampaolo from last week. Super loaded episode for you guys. And we very much look forward to getting into it with you. Now, sit back, relax, and enjoy. Without further ado, Pino, take it away. Bye. Let's go.
Però, Catenazzo, che donna sei. Io delle donne non mi fido. Il corteggiamento è un rito. Troppo spesso si finisce che una donna ti tradisce. E non mi importa se son bionde, non mi importa se son more, a me basta che siano tonde e disposte a far l'amore. Io da bambino veramente fui cacciato dalla scuola perché la professoressa mi faceva molto gola quando facevo il militare. Poi la moglie del tenente mi faceva le moine. Dio la presi tra la gente, perciò bambina, se sono qui per te stasera è una fortuna.
Andiamo! Let's go, bro. Greg, how's it going, buddy?
Good. Yourself, thanks for having me on.
Very well, man. Welcome to the Calcio Podcast. Listeners, welcome to episode number 112 of the Calcio Podcast. Sam Adamo coming at you. You can get at us on all platforms, TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, at Calcio Podcast, Facebook, the Calcio Podcast. We are very happy to have on the show this week a journalist at SBI Soccer and writer at International Champions Cup and bylines for Roma, even though he's a Juve fan. So nice little cucking of the Giallorossi there. Gotta love it. Gregory Caltabanis, local lad from Montreal. How's it going?
Going good, man. I'm going good. Not enjoying this curfew so much, but we're getting by with a lot of calcio, a lot of midweek action. But other than that, going very good. How about you?
Opa. Very good, man. Fucking on top of the moon after... Wait, no, fuck that up. On top of the world, over the moon, after that last weekend of action. So again, to Juventina on the podcast. I think it's you know, anyone that's a little sensitive who wants to just turn this off right now, you can go ahead and feel free. But I think I deserve this. I've had Interisti on the last two pods in Nick Gianoletti's absence. Nick will be back next week, but until then, I've got Greg here, who can be reached on Twitter at G Caltabanis, CALTABANIS. Did I get that right?
Got that. Okay, good job, man. Good job.
Wow, that was fucking spelling bee off the dome. I swear to God, I wasn't even reading that.
Double through it, but you got that. That's all that matters. We'll get there.
Exactly. But yeah, so this is going to be a fun pod, man. I'm really happy to have you on. And This is long overdue. We tried to get you on in like the month of September and I don't know, just kind of went stale I don't know. It was due time that we had you on to give your flawless takes. And you are a very prolific writer who puts out, I think you usually put out like a good five plus articles a week. So I'm very happy to have you on, and you're what we refer to as a big J on this podcast. You're an actual big J journal. So
big J, wow, you guys are too kind. I guess you're too kind.
So, real quick, before we get into the action this week, how'd you get into Italian football? How'd you get into Juve? I know we were talking a little bit off pod, but maybe just kind of introduce yourself a little bit more to the listeners. Worldwide, we got listeners in. Let me check some of the numbers this week. We got a ton of listeners in Saudi Arabia, even though we slate them on a semi-annual basis. Apparently, we do very well in Saudi Arabia. So hello. Hello to our listeners in Riyadh, listeners in Russia, listeners in the Ukraine. Maybe they're catching us on the same radio, on the same radio wavelengths there. And we actually have a couple of listeners in Korea the past couple of weeks. So respect to all of them for tuning in. But yeah, maybe for the people of the world, give a little bit of perspective as to what your background is and how you got into the game.
For sure. So very quickly, I mean, my entire family, they're all Milanisti, and they desperately tried to get me to follow the Rossoneri. I mean, my grandfather had a butcher shop in Montreal called Milan Boucherie after the team. So he started showing me some games on TV, trying to get me to watch Milan. And he made the biggest mistake of his life when the first game he showed me was Milan Juve. And as a very impressionable seven-year-old, I saw Pavel Nedved's gold locks, those blonde locks bouncing up and down, you know, as he was marauding that left flank. And I asked him as a kid, I'm like, who is that player? And he begrudgingly told me, well, that's Pavel Nedved. He's a Juve player. We don't like him very much.
Ballon d'Or winner. How you doing? No problem.
Controversially over Thierry Henry, but not so controversially, in my opinion. And but yeah, then after that, like literally maybe later that week, I asked my mom, like, can I get a Nedved jersey? And from 7 years old until 24, pretty much a diehard Juventino, and right about the Italian league, pretty much as he mentioned earlier, a good, you know, four or five times a week, be it the Italian league or any other league in you know, across the big five, predominantly Serie A, and that's a bit how I got into it.
That's good stuff, man. So you've been in it longer than we have. You're about the same age as Nick and I, but you've actually been in it a little bit. You've been in it kind of since pre Calciopoli. I got into it right around the World Cup in 2006 because I fell in love with Gianluigi Buffon. You've got more tenure than Nick and I do. So respect to you. It's too bad that Nick's not here to have a, you know, to kind of reignite that familiar, what is, I assume, a familiar Milan rivalry with you. But we'll do Nick justice and we'll talk about his club. So why don't we start off there? Milan nil, Atalanta 3. Where did that come from? Holy crap. Yeah. I mean, Atalanta have been pretty solid of late. They actually have been quietly not dropping matches over the past couple of weeks now. And I was very happy to see this because, I mean, again, Milan have kind of looked really infallible for the past little while. It's almost felt like they're the one team that kind of has an almost, you know, can't touch this attitude going into a lot of games. I think a lot of Interisti would tell you that they weren't necessarily competent. I know a lot of Juve fans haven't felt that way. I certainly haven't, but it feels like over the past couple of months, Milan fans have really grown in confidence, and you know, they've had no reason not to. The only game they lost this season was to the former champions Juve. So this kind of came out of left field, and I think it might have humanized them a little bit.
No doubt. I mean, they're the only team in Serie A this season who have been consistent. You have Inter, who 1 week they play Juve off the field, completely dominate Juve, and then the next they can't even score against Udinese. So I mean, I was surprised to see Milan lose, but at the same time, Gasperini has had Pioli's number for quite some time now. I read a stat, something like Milan have only lost by 3 goals 3 times. Once against Lille, once against Atalanta this past weekend, and the 5-0 defeat against Atalanta last year that pretty much kickstarted this great run. So when it comes down to it, in my opinion, more than anything, it just, Atalanta's style does not suit the way Milan play. Gasperini just seems to have Pioli's number, and it always helps when you have Josip Iličić in top form, just pulling the strings out there in the final third. It was nice to see, especially as Papu Gomez is on his way out.
You're gonna be that guy. You're gonna be the tactician, eh? It's a question of the styles, not the styles. Just don't mesh. That's what it is.
Sorry to bore the viewership on. they're an awkward matchup for anyone. Atalanta, they're definitely tough to play against.
That stat you pulled, stat guy, no problem. Is that since Pioli took over?
Pioli's Milan, yeah.
I remember last year when Atalanta smoked them 5-0, when Atalanta were scoring like 3, 4, 5 goals multiple times a month.
They were the best team in Italy.
Yeah. Certainly to watch. You could have made that case about Lazio sometimes, but it definitely wasn't Juve, even though they won the title. That's sure as shit. But I remember when that result was done and dusted, people thought that Pioli was going to be a joke, you know. And that was back when Ralph Ragnick was slated to take over in the summer before that kind of all went up in flames.
Quite the turnaround.
Thoughts and prayers. Still, every time we bring this up, we just got to give a quick shout to Boban. Thoughts and prayers to Boban, who stuck by Pioli, got fired for it, and now is sitting at home, just probably drinking himself to sleep every night, watching what's going on, watching how close they are to being on the cusp of winning another Scudetto. Certainly for competing for one. That was the whole point of this whole youth movement that he was putting forth with Maldini was to just get competitive again. You know, they've done exactly what it was that they were tasked with doing. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I'll bang that drum until Boban gets his job back or gets a job back, because that is just absolutely tragic.
Yeah, it was the popular decision to back Ralph Ragnick, even though he has no experience in Italian football. And I get he's done some phenomenal things with Leipzig, but at the same time, it's really tough to justify sacking a manager who really revitalized the entire team, set the team up and marched on this unprecedented run, and then tell you, well, thank you for your time. Thank you for injecting this newfound life into the team and bringing us back from pretty much the dead. Like, they looked awful at certain points at the beginning of the season. But here's your pink slip. Bring on Ragnick. No experience. I'm sure in the long run, Ralph Ragnick would have done some good things, but just the fact that he was like pretty much wanted total control over the club.
That's football manager shit, man. That's football manager shit. You don't get that. That's a really tough sell. That's a really tough sell in modern football. I was actually thinking about this the other day, because Nick Gianoletti. Okay, by the way, I don't know if this is an easy thing to do, but I know Nick managed to pull this off. When he gets back on the pod next week, maybe I'll have to grill him on it and try to get him to like give everyone step-by-step instructions. But anyone that does play football manager that goes nuts over the fact that you got to play as Zebre if you're playing as Juve, which in my opinion is even worse than being forced to play with Piemonte Calcio in FIFA since they gave up their naming rights to Pez. If you're fed up of playing as Zebre and not having legit actual players' faces and badges, Nick actually found a download, some kind of hack that you can mod the game with, so that you have all the proper names and badges and like so much detail to the point that you actually have the faces of every single member of staff. Absolutely incredible. But yeah, Ralph Ragnick, man, I gotta say I haven't heard that name since the summer. I actually have no idea what he's doing. Did he not quit at RB Leipzig? Did he not hand in his resignation, or is he still there?
I think he's still there, but there was even rumors I saw that Chelsea offered him the vacancy on an interim basis before they hired Thomas Tuchel, which was interesting considering his demands. And
that's so awkward. That must be super awkward. Him still being at Leipzig. It's like, okay, you got to go back into work like the weekend after you literally just told everyone, peace, I'm going to Milan. And then like, okay, yeah, awkward. Yeah, sorry, this ain't. Yeah, again, like Milan full on told him no, like it ain't happening, bud. Sorry, forget about it. And he's got to kind of come back into the RB Leipzig office with his tail between his legs. I don't know. I find that funny to think about, man. I really hope Boban does get a job very soon, because again, I'm fully on board with what he's done at Milan. But I think the right thing to do is for Paolo Maldini to bring him back. Which would be unreal, because that would be like cuck of the year too over Gazidis. So that'd be fantastic. But Milan weren't the only Milanese side to struggle at the weekend. Inter, as you mentioned, lost 2-0 to Udinese. By the way, before we get into that, I just want to shout out Atalanta real quick. I double checked; they haven't lost to an Italian side in 11 matches in Serie A. So they've drawn a number of matches. I think they're about 50-50 wins to draws in that period of time. It's been about a month and a half. But 11 games without having lost, you'd think that they'd have stormed up way higher on the table than they have. They're currently, I believe, in sixth.
They're in fifth, seven points back. Which, I mean, with half a season to go, they could be dangerous. I mean, everyone says that about them, but they've drawn a lot of meaningless games. They've drawn a lot of games that I think it comes down to motivation. They play good against the big guys.
Yeah. Let's be realistic. I mean, it's great to still see them in the Champions League. I don't think they're going to challenge for the Scudetto, but they've definitely surged. I think they're at least in a position now where they'll probably be able to challenge for the Champions League again, which is where I've definitely enjoyed seeing them the last year. I mean, if you remember a couple of years ago when they made the Europa League, that was like a huge thing for them. That wasn't even supposed to happen. That was like the thing that they were supposed to relish as being, wow, this is an unreal moment for us. And here they are. I mean, two seasons deep into a Champions League runs now. I mean, it's fucking terrific. So good on Gasperini, even though his management came at the expense of Papu Gomez today, who joined Sevilla, apparently. That's an awkward situation, man. And you've written extensively about Atalanta. I've enjoyed reading some of your work about Atalanta and their tactics. What are your thoughts on that? Because before we get to shitting on Inter, and we will, trust me, but I don't know, Papu Gomez for me was like that guy that was almost emblematic of the success that they had. You know what I mean?
You're absolutely right, man. Like, he embodied everything that Atalanta like represented. A fearless character on the pitch that would, you know, attack at will and had that quality just to put a stamp on pretty much every single game. It's going to suck to see him go. He's definitely been one of my favorite Serie A players to watch outside of Juve. When you look at the type of impact he has on games, it's incredible. I know that when Juve were playing them, you know, in the first game this season, Juve were largely in the driver's seat, up 1-0. You know, we're controlling the game, dominating the play. Then Gasperini swallowed his own pride, brought on Papu Gomez. The game completely flipped on its head. Atalanta scored that goal. I know he didn't have a direct impact in that goal, on that wonder strike by Freuler, I believe. But yeah, he changes the way they play. In the early goings, since his absence, they have been playing good stuff. Ilicic has stepped up. Matteo Pessina has played pretty good in the hole behind the strikers, behind Duvan Zapata, which I find interesting. Like, this is a player that I did not have any expectations for. And then they just keep churning out these players from outside of the top five leagues that they keep signing.
The recruitment is unmatched, and that's the thing. That was the thing with Papu. We'd seen him at Catania. We'd seen him in Serie A, but we thought, you know, I think most people thought he was finished when he went to that scrub of a Ukrainian club that I can't even remember the name of. And brought him back. You know what I mean? They brought him back. He had a... Sorry, what was that?
He was in Metalist Kharkiv or some shit like that, man.
That is unreal. You are a serious big-time journo if you can remember that shit. I don't know. I recognize the words on paper if I see it on a Wikipedia page, but I don't... I've never read it aloud. I wouldn't have been able to do what you just did and actually pronounce it. But again, he wasn't washed up, clearly. I mean, obviously, based on the success he had, but you could have been forgiven for thinking he was when he was brought back to Atalanta, and yet he became one of the most dynamic players in the league, who actually went on to get capped by Argentina, who, of course, have a plethora of attacking talent, and I don't know, kind of forced himself into most people's minds as one of the, certainly one of the most hipster elite attacking players in Europe. You know, he's well known now. People talk about him as being like super underrated and shit. I mean, the guy's going to be 33 years old here, and he just secured an important transfer to another club, which would have been unheard of unthinkable a couple of years ago. But yeah, man, I'm happy you brought up Matteo Pessina as well, because he's a personal hero of ours, showing up to the training ground in a Pornhub t-shirt, or was it a Pornhub bag? I think it was signed.
He had everything. He should have been sponsored by Pornhub. He had a bag. Yeah.
Well, I think yeah. So if you live under a rock, so Pornhub, excuse me, there could be some listeners who, apparently there's a contingent of people. There's like a crew of like 10 or 12 kids at Vincent Massey Collegiate in the East End who listen to us. So super local reference for the people in Ukraine and South Korea that are listening to us. But yeah, I mean, we've got a local guy on. We may as well, you know, he'll understand this reference. Apparently, they're like super into us, which is absolutely terrific to hear. But let's assume that those kids under 18 don't know what Pornhub is. Right, of course, right? Because
all that good stuff.
No, nobody under 18 knows what Pornhub is. So Pornhub is an adult website, kids, that you can't check out until you're 18 years old. Well, Matteo Pessina, a couple of years ago, I think it was actually last year, I think he showed up. I think he turned up at Hellas Verona training ground with what was a tote. Like a freaking tweed tote bag that was signed by a couple of porn stars. And Pornhub actually sent him a goodie bag of merch, including a t-shirt and hat, which he then rocked. But it was all spurred on
by him just serendipitously turning up with a bag once. I mean, that's way cooler than showing up with a Louis Vuitton wash bag under your arm. Can we agree on that?
Ivan Juric didn't beat the shit out of him. He looks like one crazy manager on the sideline. When he yells at his Verona players and you catch it because there's no fans at the stadiums, I am surprised he did not give him shit.
You never know, man. I mean, Juric looks like he could be into some depraved fuckery. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
he looks like the type. I don't know, super skinny. I could see. I don't know. I could see Juric with the weird bowl cut and the big nose. I don't know. He just again. This is really tough to kind of put into words, but it's really just a sensory thing. You take a look at him and you get a feeling. The vibe he gives off is that he might be into some really depraved fuckery. I don't know, like tied up shit. He reminds me of an older version of this guy I saw on YouTube once, who I think some Eastern European guy, shaved head, big nose, super skinny, built like a fucking twig, looked like David Vujanic, but like shaved head. In like a pair of gimp black leather mutande with like a pole attached where his crotch would be, and he just, I think it was this weird Eastern European sex show where the guy would just hump up and down, and the rod would bang on the ceiling and the floor, and it made a ridiculous noise. Yeah, I went down a YouTube rabbit hole and found this once. You can go look it up. It's got millions of views. Juric looks like an older version of that guy. Chris Cauchy, go to work if you could find that. Our video editor, if he comes back from the dead, you'll have to forgive us if there hasn't been as much content on social media of late. But yeah, if Chris Cauchy wants to make a comeback, that would be an unreal clip for him to chop up for us to post on social media. Okay. So I don't know. All that
took a turn. You know, I'm not against the turn, but it definitely took a turn.
Yeah, I think Matteo Pessina, though, frankly, is I really have been surprised that he's played as an attacking midfielder. I always thought he was more of a box to box type, and it's been really cool to see him just kind of float in the hole. And I think he'll occupy a little bit more of an important role with Papu gone. So that'll be cool to see. Again, I don't expect Atalanta to go on a major consistent title run here, but it's always nice when especially when teams have games in hand. You know what I mean? Juve and Napoli have a game in hand right now, and what fans tend to do is they assume that when you have a game in hand, it's an automatic win. So they just fucking add 3 points to the table, right? Like, okay, yeah, we're on 39 points, but you know, it's really 42 because we got a game in hand. Well, fuck me. When you're playing the likes of Atalanta or Lazio, who are not consistent enough to challenge for a title right now, they could still fuck shit up, man. They could still kind of like, they could still throw a wrench in your, expression, but.
Throw a wrench in your plans and your tires, slip on a banana peel. Like, that's pretty much what Lazio did to Juve. Have the win until the last second. They picked up a draw. Atalanta, we had the win. Picked up a draw, missed the penalty. Like, you know, there's about 10 teams in Italy right now that every time you play them, you're going to get a game.
I'm not in disagreement with you. There are definitely games. You know what it is? I think there's no three ways about it. It's either you go into a game thinking, okay, we should win this, or okay, this could be a fucking banana skin and we got to focus. In theory, you got to focus every fucking game. That's how you win a title. But you know, you're not going into a game against Benevento thinking, oh, you know, this could be a tough one. But you're going into a game against Hellas Verona. I understand, but it's like a psychological thing, right? You can't get over it. Well, they just got promoted. Fuck me. They were in last year. So it's Benevento. It's only Benevento. But you go into a game against Hellas Verona and you might think otherwise. You know what I mean? I don't know why. It's just a switch. Again, Hellas Verona have had a pretty good season by their own standards. Again, teams that are doing everything they should, teams that you don't necessarily think are relegation contenders, but teams that aren't. Likewise, teams that you expect to go on and challenge for European spots, they'll always be there to ruin your day. So,
no doubt about it. But a team like, you know, you have Hellas Verona, but then you have all these smaller teams, and I mean like Sassuolo's punching above their weight. Fiorentina, I mean this team could be much better than they are. They're in 12th place. I mean, we're about to talk about Inter. They go to Udinese, a team that's fighting off relegation. They hold them to a 0-0 draw when they had no business to do that. I think it just, I don't know, maybe it's COVID. Maybe it's the congested schedule that's really messing with teams. There was no preseason, less time to recover. Maybe it's a bit of everything.
That's everyone's favorite thing to do now, though, isn't it? Just blame everything on COVID. Just not just in football, but in, you know, everything. How's business? Yeah. Business is slow, you know, because of COVID, you know. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? Everyone shrugs their shoulders and says, because of COVID, you know. But maybe you're right. Just to be clear, for the record, I checked up on Google. The expression is to throw a wrench in the gears. To throw a wrench in the gears. Yeah. So
I'll put that one down on my next article.
Just to screw things up. You know what? Do that. And tag us, and it'll be like a little game. That would actually be funny. Is every week someone like threw a crazy expression at you, kind of like a freestyle rapper who has to just throw crazy expressions in the.
Yeah. I mean, wrenching the gear could slide in if my editor doesn't kill me and I get a message at 1 a.m. on Google Hangouts like what the hell is this, you know? But I'll throw it in there.
It's a legit expression. It's a legit expression.
Yeah, it is. That's gonna be my rebuttal.
And I actually heard the expression before. Whenever I hear that expression, I think of a monkey throwing a wrench into the gears. I don't know why, but like the visual I have, kind of like the my brain works in weird ways, right? I see Yudich and I think of this fucking this Eastern European kink man on YouTube. I think I hear that expression and I think of a monkey throwing a wrench into the gears. I don't know. Anyway, I digress. Look at you mentioned Fiorentina. They actually came away with a win at the weekend against Crotone. Again, a side they really should be beating. Crotone. Yeah. I mean, they've shown they can upset anyone. I guess. I mean, having drawn Juve, although I think that's just a Simi thing. Where anytime Crotone play Juve, Simi's gonna score against us for the rest of time. Going back to when he scored that crazy bicycle kick 2 years ago. But again, I mean, Crotone didn't win a game for months on end. This is a side that Fiorentina really should have beaten. So let's not get too excited over this. But good on them for getting a result. I think Dusan Vlahovic, who did score in this match, is probably going to wind up going on to a top side in Europe at some point. I really do think that. You could see it. You know what I mean?
I always had high hopes for Vlahovic. I mean, when he first broke onto the scene a couple years ago, then he kind of hit a wall. And
He did.
Is the talent there? And now he's starting to score.
He's been given more responsibility. He's got that stupid clause in his contract where he's got to be sold or his agent's got to be paid a ridiculous fee.
Really?
Oh, yeah. You don't know about this? Yeah, man. Rocco Commisso got duped, man. I think he didn't do enough due diligence, and apparently the prior administration they were in bed with this Albanian agent who's got representative authority over like a bunch of their Balkan players. I think Milenkovic, Jovetic as well.
Player agents
fucking savage, super shady. But yeah, I think there were a bunch of pre-existing deals where this guy actually had to get paid off if players X, Y, and Z weren't sold by certain dates at a certain price. So if in July 2022, you know, fucking Vlahovic hasn't been sold for 40 million, which of course would mean that the agent gets a massive bonus, a massive commission. Well, then the agent would have to be paid off, I don't know, whatever it may have been, 2 million euro type of thing. That's going to happen eventually. He'll leave. Where do you see him going? I could see him going to like a decent sized Premier League club. I could see him at like a fucking West Ham or something. Am I nuts?
Fits the mold of that physical Premier League striker. Like he runs his socks off. He's got that big physique. He could obviously play at a West Ham, but I mean, if he's thinking of, he could, you know, if he could make that move to the Premier League, if he's thinking of staying in Italy, I think there's a number of teams that would be knocking on Fiorentina's door if the price is right. I mean, look at Roma. Dzeko's not getting any younger. He couldn't do a job there. Juve are desperate for any type of striking help that they could get on the back end. Lazio, I mean, as a Vice Immobile, it doesn't look like Vedat Muriqi's doing anything or he's any good. They spent a whole bunch of money on him.
Yeah, I think Lazio would have to steer clear of any attackers for a while now in the transfer market.
There's a bunch of teams that, you know, that could be interested in Vlahovic. I think there's a market there for him in Italy if Fiorentina continues to underwhelm and not push for Europe. They have the roster to do it. It just never seemed to put it together.
Roma's not a bad call. I could see him at a kind of very upper tier Serie A side like Roma, who I think are also super ambitious. I don't think Fonseca is going to be there that much longer. We discussed it on the pod last week with Nima, but Fonseca's not the Friedkins. He's not the Friedkins guy. They inherited him. He'll probably be on the out, especially after the stupid optics and having forfeited two matches this season now. I mean,
I like Fonseca. I'll go on the record. I actually like him as a coach. It's just that there's a bunch of stuff that you just can't forgive. You mentioned it, the forfeit. Their struggles in big games. Like, you can't have that.
I'm going to have to call you out, man, on your Portuguese bias. We were talking on the pod beforehand. I mean, there's a huge Portuguese community in Montreal. You were saying one of them is your buddies, and he strong-armed you into naming your dog Pepe. Yes. So I don't know if we could trust your takes on any Portuguese men. I don't know if we could trust you.
My dog was named Pepe by force. No, not really. He's named after the former Real Madrid defender, Portugal stalwart Pepe. But I'm telling you, Fonseca's a good manager. Put it aside. Put the dog naming story aside. He knows what he's doing. It's just that Roma, do they really have any defenders outside? Like Mancini, Kumbula, Ibanez, they're good, but they're missing a lot of pieces.
That's why Brian Cristante is playing as a center back half the time now. I actually had a piece of Roma news that I wanted to address. This is an unreal story. I'm actually gonna give my Stronzo of the week to. I'll give it to Edin Dzeko, man. Poor Roma fans. I mean, we got Greg on now who writes the bylines for Roma. Last week, I think I gave my Stronzo of the week to Fonseca. Shot the hell on Ibanez for his terrible performance in the Derby della Capitale last week. But man, I gotta give it to Roma because they honestly, I could have flipped the switch on this. I could have spin zoned this and given them Hero of the Week because it's an incredible story. They apparently have been. So everyone's familiar. Everyone's been following City out of the past little while. Greg, you're familiar with the whole issue of Roma's number nine situation, right? They've got Dzeko. He was maybe going to go to Juve or somewhere. He was going to maybe get transferred. But there was a whole holdup with the Milik transfer, who now transferred to Marseille. But there was a holdup because Napoli were trying to screw up Juve's plans of getting Dzeko by stalling the sale of Milik to Roma, who would have been Dzeko's replacement. There's been a whole situation right there for a while. Well, I saw rumors this week that apparently Everton were interested in Dzeko. There were a couple of Premier League sides that might have been interested in Dzeko. Well, Di Marzio came out today and sensationally claimed that Dzeko does not want to leave Roma, and there were no clubs that have come forward for the striker. So, I mean, it's great. So Roma want to sell him, but the player doesn't want to leave. No one wants him. So I don't know. I just found that funny because people. First of all, the particular tweet that I read that headline in, which concocted in a way that made me knee slap and die laughing. But I think it's just emblematic of the terrible 2 weeks they've had.
No one does a crisis better than Roma. I mean, they're flying high. They're flying really high. You're like, wow, they're Champions League. They're going to contend for a spot in the top four. Then there's a week or a game or two where you're like, wow, they're 4 points off the top. They're going to contend for the Scudetto. And then they go on full crisis mode, shoot themselves in the foot, throw the baby out of the bathwater type crisis. And, you know, the rumors like this come out, reports of their, you know, their complete lack of oversight. They've got rid of their game manager on the touchline. They make that sixth sub. Like, it's a mess. But they're not that far off the top right now, which is hilarious. Like, it's a complete contrast of what's going on in the back end.
I was going to say, is there a faker illusion? Is there a worse optical illusion right now than looking at the Serie A table, seeing Roma in third place, 6 points behind Milan now, and thinking they have a chance? I don't think there's a greater optical illusion in world football right now that I could think of. Certainly not in Serie A. Am I alone on that?
No, you're not. I don't think they're going to challenge. It's just that with the amount of criticism that Roma get, when you take a step back from all the hate Fonseca is getting and their overall incompetence and, you know, their backroom staff, they're still not having a terrible season.
On paper, but...
Yeah, a couple more wins and they're right there with Milan, who are obviously title contenders. Obviously, I'm not saying they're title contenders. They are not a very good team.
The problem is... Does anyone believe that they'll go on that run of games right now? Does anyone really think that that's something that could feasibly happen? I mean, they lost to Spezia last week, forfeited the result to them, would have lost to them anyway. And they had, I mean, you got to say, game of the weekend was probably Roma against Spezia this weekend. 4-3. Roma beat Spezia 4-3. First of all, incredible matchup from a neutral standpoint. Good on the Roma for getting the result, which was much needed. But it was, you know, another poor defensive points performance.
Off the top of the Premier League with two games in hand. Even if they win their two games, Everton, they're going to be 2 points off. No one expects them to go on to win the title. I just think a lot of the criticism leveled at Roma is a bit hyperbolic in the sense like, yeah, they haven't been very good. They've made some head-scratching mistakes. They are awful in big games. But let's see how the second half of the season plays out. I'm not saying they're going to challenge for the title at all, and they really, really won't. But let's see where Fonseca finishes. Can he steer them into the Champions League? I think they're going to finish fifth or sixth. But
I agree.
Let's hold off on it for now.
I think you'd be hard pressed to really expect them to make any Champions League run going into the kind of final third quarter of the season. I think we'll get a better idea of what's going on. Maybe they will be in with a shot. It's not that far-fetched, but I really don't think it's something that we could realistically expect. Just on the basis of the fact they've been too inconsistent. And again, I know it's super low-hanging fruit, man. It's become a segment in and of itself, man. Low-hanging fruit. I know we say this a lot, but it feels like they're just I don't know if the shit that's happened this season is a complete outlier, but it feels like they're just a stupid mistake away from catastrophe. I don't know what it is. I really don't know, but I don't know. Maybe you could clear the air next time you write on their website. Not clear the air necessarily, but maybe just kind of. It would actually give off the illusion of being very introspective and very self-reflective, very self-aware. That would be good. Is there an issue at Roma? Is there an issue at the club in the backroom staff? You know, you put the question out there, make it look like the club is asking the hard questions after they've had to lay off, I think, two people now for different administrative mistakes.
It's tough to pinpoint their problems. It's not like, yeah, like, you know what they need on the field, obviously. It's not, but it's not like a team that, you know, they either they're lacking goals or their goalies, like in Chelsea when Kepa was letting in all those bad goals, they're like, okay, we need to get a goalie. It's not something that you could address with a few players. They definitely need some reinforcements pretty much all over the pitch. Don't get me wrong. But it comes down to something bigger than that, which has been around the club since pretty much forever, since I've been following the Italian football, where it really comes down to a mentality, this lack of belief in themselves, or they fly way too close to the sun, and then the smallest blip happens, and they come crashing down. They let their setbacks get to them way too much, whether that's a complete reflection on the manager. You know, that's a whole other story, but it happens under every manager at Roma, whether it's Fonseca, whether it's Spalletti, whether it's anyone. It's the same story over and over again. I don't know what needs to change. The ownership has changed. The players have changed, come and gone, but it's the same old Roma every year.
Again, it's an easy take. It's super easy of me to say that there's no way they could do it because they'll forfeit another two games. Obviously, that's super unlikely. It's super unlikely. But you got to wonder if there's some weird just workflow communicational issue at the club. I don't know, but it's not preposterous. It's happened twice now. So anyway, look, Stefano Sarabi is apparently coming back to Roma in a rumor that has
That's a good signing.
That is a good signing. And that's been floating around for a little while, probably about a year. We've been hearing that pretty much as soon as Stefano Sarabi arrived at Shanghai in China, we've been hearing that he wanted to come back at Roma the second he touched down and breathed in the Chinese air. I don't know. It was like something didn't sit right with him in China, which, you know, maybe is understandable. I don't know. Probably a huge culture shock, but this always felt inevitable. I'm glad actually that he's back because I think it'll probably mean that he'll be getting a little bit more experience. Yeah, but first of all, I have a soft spot for him because he came through as a kid, like 19, 20 years old, scoring for fun at Milan, and then it kind of all fell off a cliff when really just poor management of injuries by Milan's medical staff kind of derailed his career for a couple of years, but. Honestly, I think it'll be really good for him to get a little bit more competitive experience ahead of the Euro, which I'm really excited for. But again, look, we could just briefly kind of pay homage to Lorenzo Pellegrini as well for coming up for Roma late in the game. Obviously a heart and soul player for them, a very impressive player for me, yeah. Scoring for them in injury time. But it's Spezia, man, and you know what, Spezia have been very respectable this season, and I love what Vincenzo Italiano's doing. They've impressed me a number of times now. But again, like, Roma's defending this game.
At least they go down playing their own style, right?
I don't think they will go down. I, honest to God, I can hand to God, I really don't think they will go down. That's one thing that I feel confident enough saying is that I think they'll have enough to edge out a couple of the other cellar dwellers. And I think in large part is because of proper management.
They look better than Genoa. They look better than Torino. They look better than Crotone. I mean, I know Cagliari and Parma have been dragged into the race as of late, like languishing dangerously in 17th, 18th, but I don't think Cagliari and Parma are going to stay there for too long. Their teams are too good. Parma brought back Roberto Daversa, which is a good decision. Never should have.
You got it. Yeah. Once you get back with your ex in Italian football, usually that means no. But usually the there's a steadying of the ship. You know, it's not stable. That's not a healthy relationship there. But
one argument away from bringing up the past, aren't you?
Yeah. That's a very unhealthy relationship. But for the time being, for the next couple of months, you got to think that he's got it. He's got to figure it out. You know what I mean? When you make up after a big fight, typically. You're on your best behavior for a little while. You know what I mean? You've had a chance to kind of address some of the things that drove you apart in the first place, and you're very hyper focused on those things at first. I don't know if it's sustainable, but I agree. I think Parma. I'm not worried about Parma. I think Parma are gonna have enough to get out of it.
I know they lost Kulusevski, their main creator, and they lost a lot of their attack. Man, this guy would basically carry the offensive mantle on their counterattack, the basis of their counterattacking system, but.
Another Atalanta scouting product.
I mean, they still have Gervinho in there. Kuchka is not so bad. They're reinforcing. I see them linked to a number of center backs.
Let's be honest. It's not a great team. I just think they'll have enough to grind it out and stay up. I think that's really the only thing they can expect right now this first season under new ownership. I feel terrible for Spezia, though, man. Fucking 3 goals against Roma. Again, Roma defended super poorly, but 3 goals against Roma. 3 goals against one of the top sides in the country. One of the most valuable sides in the country. Yeah. That's really unfortunate. That's a kick in the nuts. Because, again...
Napoli's coming up on Thursday, so...
Well, you know, I was going to say, on paper, you would think that'll be another tough match for them. Certainly will be. You know, Napoli are definitely up there among the big boys. But my God, they've really slipped up the past month, man. They've really slipped up, and I know that they still have a game in hand against Juve, which again, Napoli fans will probably automatically throw 3 points into the table, kind of just, you know, simulating forward. But I really don't think they have much of a shot at the title. I'm hearing some people say that they still have up until listen I think the humble pie they've had to eat this weekend, having lost to Hellas Verona, which we could talk about as well. I think that kind of again easy, it's an easy take. They just lost to Hellas Verona. People think, okay, well, they obviously don't have the fucking stomach to win the title. Fine. I don't think it was that hard to take even before this weekend to suggest that, man. Like
I mean, if you're talking about Napoli, and 1 week they smash Crotone, Roma 4-0. They beat Fiorentina 6-0. And it's not even about the defeat to Verona, as you say. It's not that hard of a take to say they don't have what it takes to compete for the title. This is a side that's lost to Spezia with 10 men, played out to a draw against Torino. They're just not consistent enough to compete for that title. 1 week they're the world beaters. The next, they don't look. They don't have a clue what they're doing. I get it. They're right in the mix. If you're gonna call, if we're a bit hypocritical to be like, yeah, Juve could come back in the title race, but Napoli can't when they're right next to each other. But at the end of the day,
it's on the available evidence of what we've seen, right? Like,
it's pedigree, right? It's experience. It's that mentality where you get knocked down, but you get right back up. I mean, they have 6 defeats already.
I've got a stat for you, Greg. I've got a stat for you about that. They've got the fewest draws in Serie A. It's one or the other. They've won many games, which is why people think that they've, you know, they've got what it takes. Yeah. They've impressed on a number of occasions. Petagna holds up the ball very well. You know, Lozano's had a very good season. He's actually really started to come into his own. I know it's the second season in Serie A now, is it not? But
second year, he already smashed goal tallies.
So you know, Lorenzo Insigne has still looked pretty solid. Hasn't really missed a beat. I've even thought that Diego Demes had a very good season to date. Yeah. But they just they're losing too many games. And I know that's a stupid take, Clive. I know he's. I don't know what to say. I tell you, Clive, they're losing too many matches. It's not good. It's not sustainable. It's really not, though. When you compare what they've done so far in the balance of the season to some of the other sides that are atop the table right now, I think Juve, Inter, and Milan are the three teams that most people realistically think might have a real go at things down the stretch. They've drawn more games than Napoli. I know it's an obvious point. Just looking at the table, they've lost a lot of games. But I think that's a huge discrepancy there, man. Those extra couple of points are not only huge on the table, but also the fact that you don't quite have the same dip in morale that you get from a loss, I think is also very, very, very crucial because again, the wind kind of gets taken out of your sails when you lose a game.
Right? Yeah, no doubt about it. I think Gattuso has a lot to figure out over the coming weeks. I've been seeing these reports that they're thinking of replacing him, which I'm pretty sure are founded in absolute
nothing. It's a little silly.
I'm sure they're founded in nothing. Like, you're seeing a name like Rafa Benitez thrown up. That's a complete joke.
Well, he actually left his side in China, and now apparently Newcastle and Napoli are both linked to him. Yeah, so apparently the only sides that he could rejoin now, excuse me, the only sides that he could join are sides that he's coached in the past. Yeah, I've seen that too. I found that funny.
I guess that's why they're linking him, right? There's also obviously Allegri and Sarri who are hot topic free agents in the coaching world, but...
I mean, Sarri would not be a step in the right direction. Allegri would be very interesting. I don't think Allegri will go there, but that would be very interesting.
I think Allegri is eyeing a big job in England, but we'll see. That's what he's been – the whole story around Allegri is that he's waiting for that big-ticket job in England, but you see Arsenal turn to Arteta, Chelsea go to Tuchel, Man U sticking. So I was thinking was –
Even PSG, yeah. People have been steering clear of Allegri for some odd reason. I've got this weird working theory. I'll call it a weird working theory here. Some people might actually think this is genius. I don't know, but I don't know. Judge for yourself. I've got a theory that he's waiting for things to really be run amok at Juve to the point that Paratici's desperate on his knees saying, I'm sorry, I was wrong. Let me take you back. You can have whatever you want. It's all yours.
Allegri in year one and two is a brilliant manager. And like tactically, I don't think you have had a better manager than him in recent years.
His adaptability is fantastic.
But then you look at the last year in charge at Juve, last year at Milan, and the football becomes stale. Juve wanted a new direction. So I don't know if, like you said, I don't know if it's ever a good idea to get back with your ex. But he did make Juve perform the best in Europe. Obviously, we haven't seen what Pirlo was made out of just yet. There have been some encouraging signs there with the football he's trying to instill in Torino. But, you know, Allegri, I mean, it's an interesting theory that he's waiting for everything to go to shit at Juve. But I think there's going to be some very serious links to the Roma hot seat come summertime.
Definitely. I do want to talk a little bit about Juve, who beat Bologna 2-0 at the weekend. Looked pretty good in the game. I will say Arthur and McKenny scoring in this match was very satisfying for me as Juventino, because I've been banging the drum that both need to start for a little while. Not because I thought that they would both be sensational, although McKenny has been fantastic this season so far to date. So much grinta. Again, that doesn't look the most pretty on the ball necessarily. He's not the most technically gifted. He's got good technique, don't get me wrong, but he's not that flair guy. But he seems to be in the right place at the right time in the box and doesn't, I don't know. He doesn't tend to have much fear, which is very encouraging. Very, very encouraging.
I think you hit the nail on the head where he doesn't look like the most technical midfielder, but yeah, he is super efficient between the lines, linking everything together.
And the thing with Arthur is I felt he was never really given enough of a go of things to really grow in confidence. I think that was a big thing that was holding him back. Maybe him having gotten off the mark now and gotten a goal will be good for him. Again, it's super easy of me to say, you know, last week I was kind of banging the drum that he needs to start as Regista, be the kind of guy hovering right in front of the defenders in what I would run as a three-man midfield, because he's pretty confident on the turn and carrying the ball up a little bit from kind of his own third. So again, he scored a goal at the weekend. Great. You know, I could claim to be vindicated. Yeah. You know, I was right. He's not going to score every week, but I think it's a step in the right direction. I think, again, the mental side of the game is so huge. People neglect that. People don't think of the fact that he's in a new city, a new country, a new club. That is under a new manager. So it's not like he's coming into a system that's well established. He's coming into a system, I guess, he's not even coming into a defined system. It might be defined now, but it was
very much up in the air. In the first few weeks, so everyone was looking at the starting lineup graphics and Juve's social media team and asking like who's playing where.
Exactly. So, yeah, exactly.
A lot of growing pains in that respect. I'm happy to see Arthur kick on. Like, he definitely looks like the best partner to Rodrigo Betancourt. I still think Juve desperately need a Locatelli type, De Paul type, Houssem Aouar, these types of players. But, you know, you got to roll with what you have. And right now, Arthur and Betancourt with McKenny in front of them seems to be Juve's best option.
Yeah, I would love the idea of having a Zaniolo as well. I think that's on pause right now because of the second ACL injury in the past year. I think he needs to come back and show that he'll be fine long-term, I hope. But, as a neutral, but also as an Italian who wants to see him do well for gli Azzurri. But again, I think that's on pause for now. So I'm definitely on board with you that like an Aouar, even like a Locatelli could be very good for us going forward. But, the issue with Bentancur for me has been that he's had too much responsibility in a two-man pivot. I think that with Arthur, who can kind of recycle the ball, pick it up and be the first guy to receive it from the defenders on the turn, and have McKennie kind of be a bit more of a box-to-box guy with a little bit more of that, a little bit more of the heavy-duty type responsibilities that you would tend to expect of a guy of his physical stature and playing style. Physical stature, I know he's not super tall, but he's a pretty beefy guy. I think Bentancur can really flourish a little bit more, man. I think he will have more success with a little bit more coverage. And the key to any good midfield three is a good acronym. Think
Well, it's BAM, no?
Well, it's BAM. Well, so that works, man. Bentancur, Arthur, and McKennie is NBA? BAM.
That's a bit boring.
Yeah, that's too corporate, and you've as corporate enough. NBA is too boring.
Nothing beats the MVP midfield. Like, what I will say though, it's refreshing to see Juve's midfielders finally scoring goals. Like, the Juve of past, the Juve of old, would you would see a vintage Claudio Marchisio running in late, picking up 7 to 8 goals a season.
I love how Marchisio is now considered vintage Juve. What a sad reality for a guy for a couple of old timers like us.
Like Marchisio, Vidal, man, they would pick up about 15 goals between them. Now you look at the stats, Rabiot, Betancourt, Ramsey, all these guys, they must have 15 goals between them since they've all joined Juve. And even then, probably not.
Fewer. I was happy to even see Arthur take a shot outside the box.
Yeah, he never shoots, or when he does, it's a mess because he's not a shooter.
I was happy to see anyone take a shot outside the box. We haven't been shooting enough. It was terrific. And
He dictates play, with his little turns, his body feints. That's what I like to see from him. That's why when he pulled the trigger and it went in, I was just as shocked as anyone who woke up that early to watch Juve play. Like, I was in bed.
What are you doing, man? You got a replay. What are you doing? Just go on flight mode, man. Sleep in.
Oh, good. No, I woke up. I'm in bed on the zone on my phone like this, and the phone just kept falling.
God bless.
It kept closing my eyes. And then I see him score, and I'm like, is that art? That can't be art. I was happy for the guy, to be very honest. You're right. Confidence does play a big role. I'd love to see him get a run of games. I know we're playing Serie A B-side Spal next, but maybe, rest him before the upcoming game at the weekend against Sampdoria. Or, keep rolling with him, man. Maybe he needs it. Some player, like I know a lot of people are...
A lot of players will be rested.
Big players, but at a certain point, you also have to play them all together so they can gain chemistry. I'm not saying the whole team versus Spal.
Definitely.
Start building towards something, more consistent.
I think a lot of guys will be rested against Spal tomorrow. There is some Coppa action in midweek, which we'll shamefully just overlook as we usually do. We tend to, usually the Coppa Italia, unless something crazy happens, like last week when Spezia had that wild game against Roma, that Roma wound up forfeiting, then we talked about it. But usually, unless something crazy happens, we'll tend to neglect the Europa League and the Coppa Italia rather shamelessly. So let's kind of keep riding those coattails of just neglecting Coppa Italia and hoping that something ridiculous happens. Let's just hope that like a fucking City at B-side tops a big boy, and then we'll discuss it. But I hear you. I actually wasn't that I actually wasn't that turned off by Bologna's play. I thought Orsolini showed a couple of good moments of creativity, and they had, who the fuck is that guy flying down the left flank for them? By the way, I actually thought Soriano crossed.
Like the Dutch left wing back or Dix?
Was it Mitchell Dix? Number 55. I don't think it's Mitchell Dix.
Number 55? Because they also had
Bologna.
I mean, it was early. I'm going to have to probably fact check this one. They also have that Scottish left back kid. I don't think
Aaron Hickey. Yeah.
He's a good player, but
let me look this up because there was one particular guy down Bologna's left flank.
I mean, Moussa Baro was definitely their best player.
I thought about Vignato.
I just searched it. I didn't know.
That's Emmanuel Vignato. Christ, I've been buying him on Football Manager for 2 years. Yeah,
I used to him, but I didn't. I don't think I saw what you saw, but he did look good.
A couple of times moving through the lines, I thought he had a good level of flair about him that I was impressed by. And again, I thought Roberto Soriano bossed their midfield pretty well. Again, you know, they came up against a better side, but
they have a nice little team between Schouten, Zvanberg in the middle. Zvanberg, who was linked to Milan for the longest before they got Mete. Soriano's a good little player. Moussa Baro up front's their big money signing. Orsolini's obviously very good. They could be doing a bit better.
Emmanuel Vignato is number 55. You are correct. I just confirmed. Yeah. So kind of a creative midfielder plays. I was surprised, honestly. I probably should have looked this up before I got on the fucking pod. And he could have had that great of a game because I didn't hear his name. I didn't hear his name getting called out that often. But again, I did, you know, in a couple of fleeting moments, find him impressive. And I was actually surprised. I'm surprised now that he was playing that close to the wing, knowing that it was him. I was under the impression he was more of a central player.
Like Moussa Baro's playing up front, but most of the game he cuts in from the left wing and he tries to make the most of playing off the shoulder of the last defender. He's a nice little player. I was a bit disappointed though by his play. Like as a Juve fan, I was happy to see him have not his best game, but last season when Moussa Baro was on it, man, he was one of the most interesting talents to watch. Like I remember a game against Roma where he absolutely lit him up, top corner shot, one a volley in the back of the net. And I really had high hopes for him, which honestly, every young player goes through these moments where they are spoken of as the creme de la creme for one season, for 3 weeks of one season. They're remembered as that creme de la creme. Then they have a regular, normal season where they bag themselves 12, 13 goals and people don't think they're any good anymore, which obviously I don't think.
13 goals is a fantastic tally.
Let's go a bit lower than 7-8. But no, I think Moussa Baro still has a lot to his game to figure out, but has all the tools to do it, man. Looks like a real player. Bologna, very, very nice little team.
I was surprised that he actually joined Bologna from Atalanta. I was surprised that they let him go. I actually remember watching him at the Stadio Olimpico with Nick, Chris, and a friend of the podcast, Alex, poor kid. He's never going to live this down. If you've been listening to this podcast for a long time, you remember the story about Alex in the bathroom in Milano. Without going into the details, I'll just throw that out there as a little Easter egg to anyone that's been listening to the pod for a while, who's probably dying laughing now, just thinking back to that story. Poor kid's never going to live that down. But yeah, at the Olimpico 2 years ago against Roma, Nick and I were very impressed with Moussa Baro for Atalanta. Also love how he's from the Gambia, because every time I see his nationality on like Wikipedia, it doesn't say Gambia, it says the Gambia. Just like we are the cultural podcast, he's from the Gambia. Anyway, every time I see that, I kind of think of our pod. Kind of nice.
The one and nice, only Gambia, yeah.
Exactly. I'll say this. I was very impressed in this match with Sinisa Mihajlovic's outfit. And on that note, I want to give a Hero of the Week shout to Sinisa Mihajlovic for rocking the Peaky Blinders look. I mean, having the peak hat on the sidelines is next level mean, man. I mean, he's a bad motherfucker.
I love some Sinisa Mihajlovic. The fit was on point. It really fits his MO. As one, badass manager.
He looked like a Bond villain. He's got the little pencil stash too. So there have been. Listen, he's had his plaudits. He's also eaten some criticism. at Bologna, especially of late.
They could do better. They could be doing better. They have one win in their last 5 or 6 now. Yeah. Like, they have a better team than what they're showing.
But again, I credit where it's due. It was a fantastic outfit. I highly encourage you to look it up. And it feels like we give him Hero of the Week off. I think I might have given him Hero of the Year last year because of the whole cancer fight that he absolutely came out on top of and kicked cancer's ass. But I'll give him Hero of the Week status just for a different reason, because that was an unreal outfit. I also want to give Hero of the Week. You mentioned Cagliari very briefly before. The Fabio Pisacane, who is leaving Cagliari after a very, very long time at the club. I think he was at Cagliari.
When I'm thinking about my Hero of the Week, I'm thinking of like Mattia Zaccagni, Ilicic.
You can give you. We'll get to yours.
Just to be clear.
So he's been at Cagliari since 2015. I thought it was maybe 2014, 2015. So he's been there for 5-6 years. Okay. Well, he actually made his debut at Cagliari in 2015 when he was 29 years old. His first ever appearance in Serie A. I have a soft spot for him because he actually played for Virtus Lanciano, who used to be in Serie B. They're the club where my mom, they're the club in the town where my mom's from. So I actually have a bit of a personal connection to him, and a bunch of my cousins actually used to go watch him play. But really? Yeah, but again, he signed for Lecce in Serie B. But he was a great servant to the club, over 150 appearances for them. And he's had some major health issues, man. I don't know if you're familiar, but I'm not remembering what it was, but again, guy made his Serie A debut when he was 29 years old. And let me just look this up. Yeah, so he had...
Interesting. I have no idea.
He has Guillain-Barré syndrome, which seriously threatened his career. So it's a rapid onset muscle weakness. It's an immunodeficiency. Yeah. So apparently it almost threatened his life as a kid. And I think he was totally immobile for like a year or two as a 13 or 14 year old. And he went on to wind up having a pretty decent
Serie A pro.
Hey, hero of the week for me to Fabio Pisacane, who's moving down.
No doubt about it. I have the same attachment to players from my family's hometown as well. Like the other day, and
discuss.
For no good reason. It's literally the announcer. I hear the announcer say something like, Elas Verona's Matteo Lovato, the center back. It's like, oh, this young defender debuted for Padova in Serie B. And right away, I'm like, I like this guy. Turns out he's a very nice talent. Like you see him play. I saw him play against Juve. He looked very good. So it makes literally no sense to go to buy a story. But, you know, I mean, we all have our hometown heroes like that. And I'm curious to see where Lovato's career goes. Definitely cool story on Pisacane. We had no idea he's been through all that.
You have a Hero of Thrones of the Week that you want to get to right now. I know you seemed a little underwhelmed with me.
I thought we were going off with mine,
but
you hit it out of the park. Frankly, I wasn't aware with the backstory on Pisacane.
You can go absolutely anywhere with this man. That's the beauty of the shit. So it's a split between Fabio Pisacane for beating an autoimmune deficiency and having a great career in Serie A, and Sinisa Mihailovic for having a fucking Peng outfit. So it's a very wide scale. It's a very wide range of acceptable behavior that can land you in the Hero of the Week category. But yeah.
I was, just because it's my debut on the pod, I didn't prepare a Hero of the Week outside of performance related. So I'm going to stick with my initial one, which was, it was between two players. It was between Hellas Verona's Mattia Zaccagni and Josip Ilicic. Zaccagni, I mean, this is a player that, very honestly, he's impressed me. I mean, even before Hellas Verona were punching above their weight. Every time any big team would come up against Hellas Verona, he was always on the ball. He was always their main outlet in the final third. And when you look at their team, it is very underwhelming in the final third. I feel like they've played, since they've been promoted, I feel like they haven't had a proper striker.
They have had such a boring, they're so boring to watch. They are so boring to watch.
They are brutal. Like when Zaccagni's not playing or not on it, they really don't have that creative spark. He pretty much spurred them on to victory against Napoli. He's linked to a number of big clubs, Milan, even now.
No, I like that take. I'm gonna go out on a limb and say I think Hellas Verona surely have had the most 0-0 draws in Serie A over the past 18 months. Surely. I'd be willing to put money on that.
It's not fact check, but I'm sure you're not.
Hey, nil-nil, man. A perfect game. Perfect game. No mistakes. That's what they say. That's what they say in the Italian media. So look, before we get to your thrones over the week, because I suspect there could be a little bit of overlap here. I wanna really quickly talk about Inter's underwhelming performance against Udinese, because again it was a great weekend for Juve, who again still have that game in hand, which again to Juventini, let's just chalk up 3 points on the table against Napoli. We actually haven't talked about the Supercoppa last week, which was a thrilling game. Obviously, Insigne missing that penalty we'll come full circle here. Insigne missing that penalty kind of threw a bit of a wrench in the gears of Napoli's attempt to come back in the game. But I really think that game in 2 weeks against Napoli is gonna be super interesting, because they're gonna be really motivated to beat us, one, because I mean there's been back and forth for a while now. Since the month of October when they didn't show up to that match and the whole forfeit that was appealed and so on. Well, secondly, the fact that we now beat them in a cup tie this year, and thirdly, Napoli always wants to beat Juve. So again, by no stretch of the imagination is it a given that Juve will get all 3 points against Napoli, but let's call a spade. They're in a much better position now than they were 3 days ago. We're recording this podcast, by the way, on Monday, January 25th. So fuck me, a couple of days ago going into the weekend, things didn't look as good. Juve won, Milan lost, and Inter lost as well.
No, I mean, I fully agree with you. If we would have recorded this last week, we would have been having a very different conversation after the Inter loss. Napoli just come off a 6-0 win. But I think when Juve and Napoli square off, you have to throw form out the window at a certain point, because there's nothing that riles up Napoli as much as beating Juve. Aurelio De Laurentiis loves beating Juve. He probably hates the Bianconeri the most in Italy.
He held up a transfer of one of his own players.
Yeah.
Just to fucking screw up Juve's transfer plans. Probably got less money for him at Marseille than he would have gotten from Roma at the start of the year. But that's how spiteful he is toward Juve.
But no matter how bad they've looked, there is a very good team in there somewhere. They still have Koulibaly. They still have got Lozano. They still got a very solid midfield. They have Insigne. Osimhen's coming back. So there's a long time between now and February 14th, which is ironically when Juve and Napoli lock horns. Like, yeah, we're facing off on Valentine's Day. That just makes perfect sense. So I think it would be right now, like, yeah, everyone's thinking, wait, Napoli's in the gutter. Juve's trending upwards. Add those 3 points to the table. Juve are 4 points back of Milan in the title race. The title race is back on. It's not as simple as that. The next coming games will be very telling. I know Juve, we have Sampdoria, then Roma, and then Napoli. Whereas, as much as we were railing on Roma, they held us to a draw in this match day two of the season. Mm-hmm. So by all means, as much as Juve are back in the title race, as much as we'd love to think so, the next few weeks will be very defining. We're still talking about a team that we've drawn 6 games already against teams that we've had no business drawing against. So as much as Napoli are out of it, I think this could be a very different conversation in 2 weeks' time. I mean, they have Spezia, Parma, and Genoa. They're going to build momentum for sure.
Yeah. Well, we might have thought that going into this weekend. Obviously, they didn't, because they were met with the prowess of Mattia Zaccagni, who you've given a fair tribute to. But I think it's going to be a must win for Juve. And again, we'll get to that in a couple of weeks when that match approaches. But I think Napoli are going to be more than happy to look to spoil our parade, man. You know, and if they do beat us, it'll be through our own fault for having not been in a better position to still clinch the Scudetto. It shouldn't be a must win game, but it's become one because, as you've said, we have drawn too many matches against teams that we should have far outclassed. So I'm with you. But look, let's as Juventini enjoy the fact that Inter failed to score a goal against Udinese, and Antonio Conte got sent off in the match. So very, very satisfying shit. Do you have a Strones over the week that you want to get to?
I think we're gonna have to give it It's between two people, and they were involved in the incident, the same incident. It's between Conte and referee Maresca.
So I had a feeling. I had a feeling you were going to go here, which is why I wanted to get here last, because we tend to go. We tend to go Thrones of the Week toward the end. Oh, I'm liking the vibe we got. I'm already able to read your mind, fucking A. So I had a feeling you'd be going here. Why don't you shed a little light on what happened in this game?
So not only did Inter draw a game that they absolutely needed to win, that would have brought them in a tie for first place and probably even Campioni d'Inverno, which again, it's a bullshit title. Just historically, the team that wins that usually goes on to win the title, which, you know, on its own, it means nothing. But it would have been nice, right? And then now that you have Inter desperately looking for the winner in this 0-0 stalemate, the referee adds on 4 minutes of added time. Conte right away, for some reason, you know, goes crazy, goes ballistic here. Maybe in an attempt to spur on his own men with some motivational anger. You know, sometimes coaches do that. They throw the kitchen sink to get their guys going.
Arturo.
Starts yelling at the ref about the time on, and then the ref comes over, basically books him. He starts yelling at him. It's say sempre tu, Maresca. It's always you, Maresca. It's always you. Get sent off. But what's worse than all this, I could care less about him getting sent off. He's eating into the 4 minutes that he's debating. He must have eaten 45 seconds to a minute of the 4 minutes that he's already being pissed about.
Can you imagine being an Inter fan watching the game? Your blood's probably – because you know at the end when you're watching a game when you need a goal, right? Fuck, you're checking the time. Shit, you know, how much time is left? Oh, come on, let's go. Oh, my God. And then the referee sometimes will – blow the whistle and walk over to an injured player or whatever might be stalling the game, and you got steam coming out of your ears. You want to blow. You're like squeezing the side of your chin, like motherfucker, you know. And it's your own coach who's wasting time. It was unreal.
Play that one out. The ref is talking to him very calmly. He's going like this. The ref was wasting time, if anything.
And you know what? This is a silent. I actually remember back in June when we started getting widespread matches behind closed doors. This was something that people, you know, immediately pointed out, and we've become a little bit accustomed to it. In a lot of ways, we take this for granted now. But one of the best things to have come out of this whole pandemic that's affected football so negatively is that we as fans get to hear Antonio Conte every week just blurt out just absolutely hysterical instructions at his players. And it's just an incredible scene. Highly encourage anyone to check this out. Agachan de Maresca. Agachan.
I love saying Agachan, but with the D's. There's no T's in there when he says it.
Antonio Conte. Ciao, Antonio Conte. I think we're going to have to try to slip in an Antonio Conte imitation every week now. I think we're on like a 2-3 week streak of doing that. So maybe we'll make that a little segment. Maybe what we could do is we could read. Fuck, I just had this idea now. Maybe what we could do is we could read like a couple of sentences, maybe like a little snippet of a book or something in an Antonio Conte accent. I could do that. I'm actually very down for that here. I'll note that right now. Before we wrap up, I do want to point out that last week, and we forgot to bring this up on the pod, Marco Giampaolo got sacked. Poor motherfucker. Nick and I called this a very long time ago, probably the easiest bet that anyone's ever made that he would eventually get sacked at some point. Gotta say, didn't think that it would have been this long before he did get the boot. He was not the first manager to have gotten sacked in Serie A this season, but finally did wind up getting the boot. This has felt inevitable for quite some time now. Torino are fucking just above the relegation zone.
Torino has been brutal to watch this year. And like, again, they're a team that plays a 3-4-3, a 3-5-2, and you try and shoehorn Giampaolo's 4-3-1-2. That makes, you know, makes completely no sense to hire him. And they tried to make it work for the longest. They, you know, they tried to cut their losses, tough it out at least until halfway through the season, and it just wasn't working anymore, right?
No, but I got to say, the one thing that I kind of enjoyed this weekend, one of the few things that Torino have actually given me in terms of enjoyment this season, besides the whole Giampaolo saga, which has sadly come to an end, and this gives me hope that they will still continue to give me some kind of joy. They tied Benevento 2-2. Fucking same colors. I don't know. Lecce and Benevento may as well be the same fucking team. Both south of Italy, red and yellow, just big ass stadiums. Just flip flopped. One went down, one went up. But yeah, and I think La Padula has played for both. I could be wrong, but La Padula and Zaza both scored in this game. Zaza actually scored a brace. This felt like a throwback to 2015. I just wanted to say real quick, seeing those two guys go head to head against each other just felt like a fucking throwback to 2015. I can't, just two players who have completely fallen off the map. But I don't know, very satisfying to see guys.
I feel like every time I see this guy play for Torino, I'm like, he could be a third striker, a fourth striker at a bigger team. Like, yeah, he's nothing special, and he's always going to be remembered for that hilarious run up and that missed penalty. And he's just not good enough, let's be honest. But he could do a bit better than Torino. I was happy to see him return to the score sheet, pick up a big stoppage time equalizer for them. I mean, they've only won two games this season, but temporarily they're out of the relegation zone, at least for now. But I don't know. Like I said earlier, I think them along with Crotone and Genoa, I think they're my picks for now.
Let's be honest, they're going to wind up probably getting saved, and poor Giampaolo is going to wind up getting the blame for their terrible performances. Anyway, that would definitely give Nick a lot of joy. He hates him obviously from his time at Milan. So, I was very happy to see Zaza score a couple of goals in a game that La Padula also scored in. Very underrated stadium Benevento had. I said they had a big stadium. That's actually not true. You know, it's deceptively small. It looks big when you look at it. I think they seat 20 some odd thousand, but it looks massive. What is it called? I think it's called the Stadio Ciro Vignato.
It is.
Is that what it's called? Okay, dude. Are you a big Italian rap guy?
I mean, yes, in the sense that it was. I did listen to a lot of it, but not religiously enough that I know too many people.
Okay, well, when we wrap up this pod, we're gonna have an unreal track from Capo Plaza's new album. He actually posted on Instagram last week a promo for his album in San Siro from like a low kind of angle staring up at him, and he's from Salerno, which is close to Benevento. And I swear to God, I saw this post on Instagram and I was going nuts. I was sending it to a couple of buddies. I was like, my God, he's at the fucking Stadio Ciro Vignato. This is unreal. He's at the Benevento Stadium. I thought I confused the San Siro with that stadium. First of all, I'm an absolute idiot, obviously, for conflating the two. But I'm telling you, if you actually look it up, you'd see the similarity between the terraces. It's
a beautiful stadium. That nice enough stadium for a newly promoted side, a minnow in Italian football, pretty much, and they do good.
Honestly, I fell in love with that stadium when Brignoli scored that goal, the goalkeeper, to tie Milan, I think, in like Gattuso's first game there 3 years ago. People were falling over each other in the curva. Just super steep, super impressive. Yeah, great stadium.
They've on my come bucket a long list way for sure. From that season, Benevento, already with 22 points this year, mid table. They've come a long way.
I'd like to see them stay up, honestly. I think. Having more Southern Italian teams in the league is always refreshing. It's just a little bit of a change of pace. They tend to struggle to kind of compete long term, but yeah, I'd be happy. I'd be happy to see them stay up. If not to see that stadium full again in Serie A next year. Greg, this was fun, man. Thanks for joining us this week. Thank you for engaging me for as long as you did. Thanks for bearing with my incessant interruption and so on. You provided some fantastic insight, my guy.
It was a lot of fun, man. We should definitely do this again. It was a very good time going through the different headlines, especially that bit on Ivan Juric. I don't think I'm going to forget that one for a long time.
Again, Chris Couchy, buddy, you got to make a comeback. It's got to be for that clip right there. So let's just say that live on the pod so that. Chris maybe feels a little bit of pressure to come out of semi-retirement and create another video. I know the guy's busy. I'm not gonna blame him. The guy hasn't been slacking, poor kid. But let's put a little bit of pressure on Chris to turn that out. You can stay tuned to our social media platforms on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Calcio Podcast to see if Chris does come through with that video. If not, we'll probably post another couple of highlights from this podcast, and always do tend to post any highlights of our podcast. So do check us out there. Subscribe to us on all platforms. We're on SoundCloud. We're on Spotify. We're on iTunes. We're on Spreaker, iHeartRadio, all major listening platforms. You could check us out there. Subscribe and check out Greg on Twitter at G Caltabanis. And again, you could check out his writing for the International Champions Cup, occasionally for Roma and for SBI Soccer. Again, at G Caltabanis on Twitter. We'll have his Twitter handle tagged in the bio of this podcast. So listeners, thank you for tuning into this 112th episode of the Cultural Podcast. Gianoletti's back next week. Should be good to have my Milanista buddy back. And again, Greg, maybe next time we'll have to get you on with Nick so you can kind of get that familiar banter that you tend to have to deal with in your family.
No, for sure, man. For sure. Very, as you mentioned, very familiar with Milan Juve banter, but I must say, I think I respect the Milanisti the most.
Well,
That's not going to go down well with the Interisti, but the rivalry to me is the most historic one in Italian football.
Listen, man, you better respect them the way they're playing this season. It'll be interesting to see how things are going when you do come back on, man. So, yeah, man, thanks again for joining us. Listeners, till next time, we'll catch you soon. Blazza, take it away.
L'ho pagata mami, io ti voglio pami. Aspetta, non sali per tirarti giù. Ho sbagliato, corso troppo presto. Lugano non puoi sbagliare adesso. Ma ci risiamo, quindi tipo godeina. Fumo marijuana, qua giù siamo safari. Sangue sulle mani, non restiamo schiavi. Ma ci ribelliamo, noi non siamo uguali. Ma ci completiamo, yeah yeah yeah. Apro gli occhi, è sempre uguale. Guarda che il tuo impero cade, yeah yeah yeah. Ora tutti fanno brutto, non sei un vero criminale. Più è solo provocare.
Non mi chiedere perché, ho problemi da risolvere. La fame fa me sto nella street, ma voglio stare a Miami Beach,
yeah. Non mi chiedere perché, ho problemi da risolvere. La fame fa me sto nella street, ma voglio stare a Miami Beach. Non chiedermi scusa, basta una parola. Lo se dura dura, la strada è una sola. Baby in fondo sai se son così. È solamente colpa della street.
È solamente colpa della street. Perché dovevo riempire i jeans. E sto con i gorilla nello zoo. Ma voglio star con te a bere.